Welcome. This is Winning at Life, live financial news talk radio. If you have a financial situation, not sure what to do, you're at the right place. The number, I'm your host, Gregory Ricks, and the phone number to join the conversation. Let's talk about money, your retirement, your savings, your paycheck to paycheck, credit card debt, or getting more green. 504-260-0995.
I'm your co-host, James Parker. Today, we're going to find out if you are financially smarter than a teenager. About half of teens couldn't pass a quiz of financial basics that was released in this survey from Junior Achievement USA. Y'all have heard of Junior Achievement. I'm thinking what we should do, though, Gregory, is we should ask producer Angie these questions. Now, don't go look up the quiz. Angie hadn't seen it yet. So don't go look it up. Maybe we'll do it in the next segment. So stick around for that. But Gregory, I think I just made James Parker history. And whenever they write history books, there's going to be a chapter about me. And this is going to be one of the sections in that chapter because I made Mexican food history tonight, Gregory. I went into the Taco Bell that's between your office and my house, and the drive-thru was down. Very disappointed, but I'm glad it was down because I went in, and to the right is the regular old cash registers. To the left, self-serve kiosk, and things will never be the same. Gregory, you can go in there. Do you know how glorious it is to open up that menu and you can flip through the Taco Bell menu at your own leisure with pictures, with all the modifications at your disposal? It is so different because usually when you go through and you're looking at the drive-thru, it's your turn and the lady's already asking you when you've only been reading.
There's pressure there, huh?
Yeah, you've been reading for about 5 seconds. They're like, are you ready to order? And you're like, hang on. And so then you start to order and someone changed their order. And you do feel rushed and you don't want to make all the modifications because they can't hear you well and they'll probably get it wrong. But the thing about these self-kiosks, though, I just see so many of these other issues going away. And this is a game changer. This is a life changer. Well, for me, because I love Taco Bell. But
so if you forgot your credit card and all you have is $20 in cash, how does that work at the kiosk?
At the kiosk, you can either pay or you can take your receipt to the cashier.
Oh,
yeah, see, now, it looks almost...
So there is an answer for the obstacle I threw up, because most everybody's... Usually it's the opposite. You know, I forgot my credit card.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm out of cash. Can you take my credit card? Remember, that used to be the thing back then.
Yeah, well, here...
Fast food didn't always take credit cards.
Here's the big question I've had. When I moved to the North Shore in 2006, and I had to live over in, like, that Madisonville, Mandeville, Covington area. And there's a Danny and Clyde's up there off Highway 59. And in 2006, Gregory, they had a self-order kiosk that if you had your credit card, you could pay right there. If not, it would print out the receipt and you would take it to the cashier and pay right there. So they figured this out. They didn't figure it out 5 or 10 years ago, at least 13 years ago. I really thought this would be everywhere by now. But I'm just glad
it's finally. Okay, so how did the food... Okay, you did it at a kiosk, no people involved. So how'd the food get to you?
You, at the end of your order, they say type in your first name and last initial, and your name will be called when your food is ready. So after you turn around from the kiosk, the lady was already staring at me. She goes, did you have a drink? Because she's going to hand me a cup.
Did you?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I call it a dry order. If I know I'm going to go home and eat it, I order it dry. So I'm a little excited about this.
Isn't that the most popular restaurant in the country is Tex-Mex Taco Bell?
No, the most popular one, actually, the one that
or
has the most
Moe's?
If you're asking me for the most popular Tex-Mex restaurant, maybe it is. The most popular fast food chain, though, I think is still Subway, isn't it?
I'm going to check on that.
I think Subway has the most locations. I think they used to. I'm recalling this from memory. Now we're both doing it. Fast food chain, most locations. Oh, someone searched for that before, apparently. What do you have?
I got the best. It kept coming, the best. I don't want to know the best.
Nope.
Most popular restaurants in America. Let's try that one.
Okay, the world's largest fast food chains. Number one is Subway, so I had that right. Number two, you can guess this one maybe? Three will throw you off, but two, you can guess two.
Two?
Yeah.
Taco Bell.
No, it's McDonald's.
Really?
Number three, Starbucks. Does that count? I mean, it makes the list. It's fast drink/food chain. That does sound kind of weird calling it fast food. But that's the numbers I have over here. This is according to worldatlas.com. Gregory, is there any chance y'all have a kiosk and Gregory Ricks and Associates? Because I know you have the GPS, and that's sort of like your own little dashboard, and that's like the nearest comparison here. But this is something you've had for a while. We don't really talk about it on the show that much.
What is that now?
Your GPS on the app.
Yeah, the guided planning system.
Yeah, the dashboard. You can log in online. Now, what you looking at now?
30 most popular fast food restaurants in America has a different list
than the World Atlas one. Was it not Subway? Because I was maybe I'm looking at a worldwide list.
Let me get down here to number one. Let's start at number one. They said In-N-Out Burger.
No, that's not with locations. That has to be how they're ranked. In-N-Out is a regional place anyway. There's no way they have more.
Papa Murphy's is second. Never heard of that place. Panera Bread, been there. Captain D's, never heard of that.
Oh, I love Captain D's. It's Pee-wee? A seafood place. I don't know Pee-wee.
Whataburger.
Well, that's awesome, but
Chick-fil-A.
It's not huge. It's regional.
Krispy Kreme's coming in at number nine. So I don't know. I guess it depends on who's making up the list.
You have like a customer satisfaction list.
You sure?
Yeah. It's not by number of locations for sure.
I wouldn't buy locations. It's most popular.
Oh.
I would think that would go by sales, which could turn into who has most location sales the most. Could be. I was just trying to, what's most popular? Let's see. And the Washington Post gives us the most popular restaurants in America. But
you know how many locations Subway has? 44,229.
Well, they must be number one then.
Yeah, huh? And a big chunk of them are from right here to your office. Did you know, like, from where we're sitting now, if we were to drive to your office, as a crow flies, it's only like 3 miles, but there's about four Subways on the way. You've noticed that, haven't you?
Not really. I have not been counting them, but there's plenty around. If you like, darn, I should have stopped at Subway. Now I'm hungry. Oh, there's one right there.
There's another one. Sure. Look, and right past your office, there's three on the way. There's one at the mall, and then there's one at the strip mall across the street from the mall on 17th Street over in Fat City. We are surrounded by Subways. So,
yeah, the guided planning system website that we have. It's where you could load in everything you're doing financially. If you want to have your checking, credit card, your mortgage information, your investments, even from a do-it-yourself standpoint, if you have annuities, look, we even have a document vault where you can load documents in there. Like, gosh, instead of carrying it around, you can keep it in your vault that you can access by phone, by laptop. You could look at any time, see what your market accounts are doing. Great resource tool.
I'm just wondering what took these guys so long, because I know that they are falling all over themselves to try to make the customer happy. They're coming up with new promotions. They're coming up with new food items. They like to refurbish their restaurants and redecorate, and they like to change their logo every 10 years, and they have all kinds of these commercial brands. But it was interesting because I was kind of thinking along that lines today at your office. And I don't think people appreciate how much time people who own a small business spend trying to keep their customers happy, trying to say, okay, they're happy now, but what are they going to want tomorrow? What are they going to want in 5 days? What are they going to want in 5 months? What are they going to want in 5 years? And we spent a big chunk of time talking about these things over the course of the business. And it's customer service is huge.
It really is. You saw that we spent a good deal of time talking about it today. On the process and customer service and follow-up and all the things that we spent an hour and a half going through a lot of things to see what can we improve on as an overall team today. I think that's important stuff.
And it's funny because it's one of these things where some people have a negative opinion of business and corporate America, and everyone's just trying to get your money and everyone's trying to take shortcuts. Not most small businesses. Look, even when I was in high school working at little restaurants, these people that only had, like 20 people on the payroll, they were concerned about is keeping the customer happy. If you have a snowball stand, number one thing you're concerned about is keeping your customer happy. If you're a mechanic, sure, there's some bad apples out there, but most of them just want to keep you happy. Find the guy that does the extra thing, that instead of just fixing your car, he vacuums it out while he had you in the garage just to be nice, that's... Don't take customer service so lightly. And yeah, I'm a little excited about Taco Bell, but I see a bunch of small businesses out there doing the right thing. And it just made me think about the time we spent today sort of trying to do the same thing.
You know, and the My GPS, which is a part of the website, upper right, you can click on it and find out more about it. But I just think it is a great tool for clients to keep up with what's going on with their money. A lot of resources, video, they can do advanced planning, analytics. It just really has some cool stuff. And I recommend, if you are interested in that, go to gregoryricks.com, and there's a button on the website. I'm not sure if it's fixed on the mobile app. What we just discovered, there's not a button on the mobile app yet. I don't know if that was corrected yet, but we're working on that. The website's kind of new. Couple weeks ago, we loaded the new version.
All right, coming up next, you will find out if you are financially smarter than a teenager. If you have a financial situation, call Gregory, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Hey there. It's Winning at Life. Live financial talk radio. Get the phone. Make the call. 504-260-0995. I am your host, Gregory Ricks. If you want to know more about me, and why am I here doing this? Well, I have a day job, financial advisor, fiduciary, money manager, sometimes a counselor, sometimes a problem solver, but mainly to help you. 504-260-0995. Let's talk about your money. What's up next, James?
All right, are we roping Angie into this, producer Angie? All right, so we're about to find out if you're smarter, financially smarter, than a teenager. Now, we're not going to go all the way down to fifth grade, because that's too easy. That's almost like cheating, right, guys? But teenager, that's not bad. So we're basing this off a survey. Do you know the youth organization Junior Achievement? They do stuff at all the schools around here. So they surveyed 1,000 United States teenagers aged 13 to 18 only. So we're even skipping out the 19-year-olds here. And they didn't do so good. About half of them can't pass a basic 8-question financial quiz. So let's get Angie in here. Angie, you with us?
I am.
All right. Do you have a copy of this? You didn't go Google it or something?
No.
Real quick, did you?
I have no idea.
Well, thank you for not Googling it. I'm kind of worried about your lack of ambition.
I'm just hoping I'm smarter than a teenager financially speaking.
Good. You know what? I'm glad you're worried about it, because I don't want you just walking into this all confident and cocksure. I'm glad there's a little bit there. All right, so you want to start out with the first one here. What should you research and be prepared to pay prior to moving into a rental property? I'll say it again since I butchered it so bad. What should you research and be prepared to pay prior to moving into a rental property? Don't worry, this is multiple choice.
Okay.
A, current month's rent. B, last month's rent. C, security deposit. D, expenses associated with establishing utilities, or E, all of the above.
E, all of the above.
All right. Well, yeah, that you got that one right. That one's not too tough. See, so you're one for one. You're all worried, and you're not even sweating it now. You're like, hang on, that was a little too easy.
Right.
All right. Next one. Which loan term? Or Greg, you want to do the next one? All right. Which loan term is best if you want to reduce the total amount you will repay over the life of the loan? A, a 3-year loan, 5-year loan, 7-year loan, or a 10-year loan? Which loan term is best?
3-year.
And the correct answer on that is, well done, 3 years. You're doing, see? All right, now I'm starting to worry about teenagers, because Angie's not even hesitating on these, Gregory. Is that suspicious? She might have Googled it over there, and she's just looking at it.
I'm also not a teenager, so that helps.
And you have rented things before.
I have.
And you have had stuff on loans.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fair enough. What is the most important consideration? I'm sorry. What is the most important financial consideration when deciding whether to take out a college loan? A, the school you attend. B, your GPA and college testing scores. C, the return on investment you'll receive from obtaining the degree. Or D, whether you live on campus or off campus.
I'm going to go with C.
Yeah, you got that one right too. Now that one, I'm pretty sure the teenagers are getting that some of the stuff right.
I would hope. At least that one.
All right, Gregory, are you okay with all this so far? I mean, you don't have any questions with the questions?
Nope. Pretty easy, though.
I know. This
softball questions.
Financial guru isn't too impressed with the test so far. That's all right. Oh, man, I just hit the wrong button there. Here's the next one. The best time to shop for a car loan is A, at the dealership when you are purchasing a car, before you start searching for a car, once you find a car and you're ready to make an offer, or it's always best to pay cash for a car.
C,
once you find a car on which you want to make the offer.
So you can negotiate?
No, I think that was before. So you got one. I mean, you missed one. How do you calculate the cost of renting a place to live in order to determine whether renting is an option for you? Add the rent plus all the additional expenses of renting a place. Estimate the exact rent cost and cost of utilities. Identify the exact amount of rent that is owed each month to a landlord. List all the components of the rent amount you will pay to the landlord.
I'm sorry, what was B?
Estimate the exact rent cost and cost of utilities.
B sounds practical.
No, your instinct was right. It's A.
Okay.
It was just basically B plus the words additional expenses on there, but that was a long one. Why did
that one was also tricky.
Yeah. All right. Well, what should you... oh, no, we already did that one. Sorry, this went out of order. Loan payments are based on A, APR, B, interest rate, C, length of the loan, B and C only, or all of the above?
All of the above.
I think that one's B and C only, but I'll have to wait till the end of the quiz to find out who's right on that one. The loan payments. I'll have to make a note on that one because it won't tell me the answer until I go through it because I'm actually having to go through the actual quiz itself here. Yeah, we did that one. Hang on. One more. If you are unable to pay off the entire balance you owe in credit card debt, the best way to pay off the balance is to pay more than a minimum monthly payments, pay off the card with the lowest balance first, pay the maximum your budget allows on the card with the highest interest rate, or pay the maximum payment on the card with the highest balance.
Ooh, okay. Okay, I'm going to go with my instinct was pay more than the minimum balance.
Yeah, that one's going to be C, actually. Pay the maximum on the card with the highest interest rate.
Pay the max. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
All right, so you got 5 out of 8. Gregory, I think that counts as a pass. She passed the quiz, so I think we get to keep her. Isn't that the deal?
Yay!
Your job was on the line, isn't that a thing? We keep Angie. So, playing along at home, how'd you do? Are you smarter? Are you financially smarter than a teenager? I think most of us passed that. I'd be surprised if there's anybody out there that only pulled in 3 of those questions. But teenagers, I have such a hard time beating up on people that are 13 to 18 years old because I have to think back. If I was 13 years old, how would I do on that test? And I don't think I would pass it either. So that's about it. There, that was the whole quiz. Not so bad, huh? All right, Gregory, I have kids. Before they leave the house, what do they need to know about finances before I'm done with them and they're out from under my roof?
They need at least understand the basics of managing inflow and outflow of money, how to manage using a debit card, credit card, if they have that, you know, keeping track, just understanding that fundamental process of dealing with money, the inflow and outflow of it, I think is a fundamental thing because then everything grows from that. You should take in more than you're spending.
You know, that
is just a good fundamental principle right there to start with.
I think I knew as far as reading words out of books, how all this money stuff worked when I first piled into adulthood, but I didn't have any practice at it. So shockingly, when I fell out of college and I got my first job and had moved to the big city and I was living on my own, I had a roommate, but I actually did really good with money because I just didn't spend anything. I didn't know how much I had. I didn't have a budget. I wasn't used to any of this. And so actually my first couple of years out in the real world, I was able to save up quite a bit of money, but I literally had no expenses and I didn't take on anything. And I was doing pretty good living below my means, but it wasn't because I planned it. It was because I was so uncertain about my future.
I think at some point in time, and there's not usually always sharing and stuff, but reality of what things cost, get them involved in the shopping process when they're able to do that at that point. And sometimes, you know, the reality of what cars cost, and maybe it's more of what they cost on a monthly basis. Because you look at some shocked faces when you kind of tell them, well, yeah, that'd probably cost you $600 a month. What? Well, yeah, that's just for the car. That's a payment that you're going to make on a car like that, probably. But that's not everything. You know, there's that fuel. Oh, the insurance. And then, yeah, it's going to break.
Well, even if it doesn't break, just the maintenance, the brake pads, the tires. I'm about to have to buy an $800 set of tires from a truck.
Or if you're curbing it, the tires, it could cost more. Some people do that. Yeah. I know some.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe a little bit here and there. All right, so coming up next, I want to talk a little bit more about what's going on in the financial news. But if you have a financial situation and you're not quite sure what to do, call Gregory, 504-260-0995. We're also going to talk a little bit about the next live event we got coming up next week. But if you got a call coming, don't let us stop you. Feel free to interrupt, 504-260-0995, or you can give us a call or text from the front screen of the Winning at Life app. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Welcome back. Winning at Life, live financial news talk radio. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. Half work, half do not work. 156.7 million Americans have full-time jobs today. That's 48% of our 328.7 million citizens. Hey, taxes are due in a few days. 50% of the taxpayers ranked by adjusted gross income paid 97% of the $1.44 trillion of federal income taxes collected in the year 2016. That's the latest year for information released. Are you ready for tax day?
Barely. Just got it wrapped up last week.
You know, it's kind of like a week from today to be exact. People, I guess, will be lining up to get those things in the mailbox.
Oh, it is a week from today.
A week from today.
A week from tomorrow is your next live event. Right after tax day. We didn't do that on purpose, did we? Set up your live event right when everyone's in the aftermath, you know, that destructive burning cloud of ash.
I did make sure there wasn't a carryover like the last 2 years. You know, it was the 16th, 17th, depending on what was. There was a couple reasons why it was extended, but not this year. It's due on April 15th. Has to be there on April the 15th to settle things up. If you're not ready, then it's called an extension, but they would like you to send anything you're going to owe them anyhow. They would have liked you to have already sent everything you owe them in as well. They just like it that way. Uncle Sam. Dude, unprepared. Hey, 55%. No, it's more. It's 58% of Americans have not executed a will and other estate planning documents. A medical directive specifies that action should be taken to prolong an individual's life. Do you have a medical directive? Executed a will, other estate planning documents?
Mine are behind. I've had like 8 kids or something since last we did the will, so I'm a little behind on that. Are you all up to date on your estate planning? Has anything massive happened since your last update?
You know, mine needs tweaked as well.
It happens.
Actually, you know, life moves on. Kids in college need to make some adjustments on that. Business grows, need to make some tweaks on that too. It's kind of a work in progress. I don't believe it's something where you do it and forget about it. You know, a lot of times I'll have somebody, yeah. We did one about 20 years ago. You know, the kids were, you know, in their teens. Yeah, things may have changed.
Might want to update that one. All right, to the phones we go. Eddie in Thibodeau, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. Hang on, waiting for Angie to hit the button. Angie, we call for Eddie. There it is. Hey, Eddie, how you doing?
How y'all doing? I'm calling about an update on my daughter's...
All right. Well, let me update the guy listening because Gregory and I are already caught on to who you are. I just had to hear your voice, make sure it's the same guy. Eddie and Thibodeau called, must have been years ago, asking about his daughter's going to LSU and should he buy or rent. And then she finished LSU and then he's like, all right, what do we do with this place? Do I just keep renting it to someone else? Do I sell it? Do I sell it to her? Do I rent it to her? And so then we ran through some of those options. First off, what did you decide on to do with that old condo or townhouse or whatever she had? And then give us the update on what's happening today.
Well, it's for sale right now. And hopefully I can sell before the school starts in August. I'm sweating it out.
Yeah.
So hopefully I've got the price where the market value is. So hopefully I'll get some bites in the next couple of weeks to sell it. my daughter graduated half a semester earlier than expected because she had good grades, which is okay with me. She got a job with Capgemini, which is a large company, headquarters in Paris, and they have offices in India and Chicago and Houston. So she's living in Houston now. And that company she works for actually develops the software for the Taco Bell's kiosks and McDonald's kiosks.
That's amazing. This whole show just went full circle then.
Yeah, went full circle. Now, she's now the company's so large that they do work for, like, Oracle, which I think is, like, a firmware company. And
it's a database company.
Database company. And her position is to manage that account with a group of other people. And she's going through boot camp right now. They're 2 weeks of training in Chicago, and they're flying her to India for 2 weeks of training. And she's like, "Daddy, I have no idea what I'm doing." I said, "Daughter," I said, "just fake it till you make it."
Sounds like a pretty good update thus far. What's got you so nervous about the condo being sold?
Well, it's been on sale. I haven't for sale for like about a month now, and I really haven't gotten any serious inquiries about it. I lowered the price a little bit, so hopefully I'll get some bites on it within the next couple of weeks before school starts.
Well, Gregory, what's that buying season look like for people that are trying to get their – because people are going to LSU in the fall.
The other question I have is, I guess you do not have anybody living in it at this time, Eddie.
I have two renters there actually renting the place. So I am getting money in.
Awesome. Do you expect them to be there next year?
No, but they made comments that they do have friends that would like to rent it out if I don't sell it. So.
Okay, so they're transitioning out.
Yes, they'll be moving out in August.
Yeah, because it could be the buyers could be like you with a kid or some kids that need a place to live. So it's was just curious about that. But you are getting cash flow, but you'd like that to wrap up. It's just it's coming up that season. This school year's ending here not too long this semester. And so you're looking for that. You've got a gap there that they've got to find housing for the next year. You're either going to, I guess you're doing one of two things, selling it or leasing it again.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Yeah.
Anything else we can help you with, Eddie?
Well, you was asking about how to get your teenage kids to be more responsible financially. And right. One thing that I did that I think was something good is all the money that we get received from Pawpaw and Christmas presents and birthday presents and cash for our kids, we put it in their own savings account. And when they graduated from high school, we took that money and opened up a savings account for them. And in turn, we told them they had to borrow money out of their savings account so they can get credit established. So we took the $4,000 or $5,000 that they had in their accounts from their grandparents and Christmas and birthday money, open up a savings account in their own name, and then we went ahead and got a loan on their own money because nobody would give them a loan. So they actually paid off. They borrowed money on their own money and paid it off, and that's how they established their credit. So by the time they were 19, both of my kids had credit scores of 780 points, and they were still 19 years old with a savings account of about $5,000. And I think that's one thing that really helped them out financially was learning how to pay back that money and watching your credit score grow as you paid off that loan.
That sounds like a great tip, Eddie. Good stuff. All right. And anything to add, Gregory?
Hey, I think that's good stuff. The strategy of borrowing money against your money and showing that you can make payments is a core fundamental way to start that and get them to understand that process. And that's excellent.
All right. Sounds like you did a good job with them kiddos, Eddie. Thanks for calling us again. If you want to be after Eddie, 504-260-0995. So kids in college, housing situation, some of that sound familiar? Like, what is the buying season for someone that's wanting to pick up Eddie's condo?
Now.
That's what I would think,
you've got school's essentially starting in August. So you're looking at, okay, we're in April. What's this 90-day windowish there to go buy something, finance or go through that sales cycle. You bought a house. I've bought house two or three.
A little time consuming.
Yeah. There is a process to that. And then there's the hunting and finding it. So people are looking. Just got to make sure it's out there for those looking. A lot goes into it, the location, the price.
This might be a dad-to-dad deal by the time it's all said and done. All right, if you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, call Gregory, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Winning at Life. Live Financial Talk Radio. Hey, join the conversation. Get the phone. Make the call. 504-260-0995. Just looking at some of these numbers here again. What was that tax number I gave you a little bit ago? Yeah, here it is. About half of the people work, don't work. 50% of taxpayers pay 97% of the federal income tax collected. Almost half the household in America headed by individuals at least age 55 have no retirement. Well, 48% of households in America headed by individuals at least age 55 have no retirement savings. 26% have a defined contribution plan, but no defined benefit pension. And the remaining 26% have both a defined contribution plan and defined benefit. That's a 401k and a pension, but 48% have no savings. I was just kind of looking through your stats. I have, you know, the halves, kind of half does this, half does that.
So half the country works and half the workers pay the taxes.
Yeah. And half the workers have some savings.
Yeah, there you go. It works that. It's a little pattern developing.
I know. It's just kind of looking at trends going there. When I talk about our guided planning system, all the different things that we cover with families when they sit down, you know, we talk with them about income planning. We talk with them about investment planning. This is a process that we move through. So, you know, and the fact-finding document that we cover on the first, it's about 14 pages. Now, it's not all questions, but it's stuff we're writing in, making notes, completing as we go through the process. We're wanting to be very thorough. And some of this is looking for your concerns and your needs and what you're looking to learn and find out. But when we're moving through the income planning phase, we're going to address, you know, Social Security, income expenses, inflation, longevity, spousal income planning, spousal continuation. On the investment side, we want to look at assessing risk tolerance, adjusting portfolio to reduce fees, evaluate ways to reduce risk while accomplishing your goals, comprehensive institutional money management, volatility control. Tax planning side, assessing the taxable nature of your current holdings. You know, you hear me talking about the three tax worlds, you know, putting money away pre-tax, putting money away after tax, growing money on a step-up basis. Is it being taxed as ordinary income, or are you getting some breaks, or is it coming out tax-free? So we want to strategize ways to include tax deferred or tax free money in your plan. Strategize which tax category to draw income from first to reduce the tax burden. Leverage your qualified money to potentially leave tax-free dollars to your beneficiary. Stretch IRA planning. Then the other two areas. First is healthcare planning, looking at all aspects of Medicare, parts A, B, C, D, G, N. You know, there's a good bit to that. Analyzing options for long-term care plan. Not many people get long-term care insurance. And one of the reasons is it is experience-based. You know, how is your auto insurance based? It's experience-based. You keep wrecking that car, then insurance premium's going up. Well, in long-term care, everybody doesn't have it, so the risk is spread among a smaller group of people. And what do you think is happening as they grow older?
They get expensive.
Yeah, costs are going to go up. And if they all live to 65, we know life expectancy moves to late 80s instead of late 70s. And then we're taking into legacy planning how to deal with your estate. And a stat I gave to everyone on Saturday is that one out of three Americans at least age 85 has Alzheimer's. How many's in the room where you're at? How many people? Is there three? Look around. Which one's going to have Alzheimer's?
And this is where the funny one tells a joke. Yeah.
So when we look at going through this process, and are we solving it all on the next visit? No, but it's a process you start working through in all these areas. And when should you start this? Today, tomorrow? And these are the things we talk about and work through with you. And that going back to that one question is, why do you have enough money saved to make sure you have income? Do you have your money protected or leveraged to deal with? What if you're one of the three? What if you're the one that's one out of three at age 85 that has Alzheimer's? What if that's you? How are you going to handle that? You're not handling it. It's your loved ones that are looking out for you. How are they going to handle that? Have you had discussions? Have you looked at how you could leverage your assets to do that? And with income planning, are the investments going to sustain that? Maybe if you reduce taxes, that could help as well. If you like this conversation, you can call me at my day job. Also, this is what we do for people during the daytime. The office number is 504-832-9200, gregoryricks.com.
Daryl LaPlace, you're next up on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you today, Daryl?
Thanks for taking my calls, guy. I love the show. I've inherited an IRA, and my understanding is if I withdraw that money before I'm 59 and a half, I incur at least a 10% penalty. My question is
inherited?
An inherited IRA, yes, sir.
You will not have a 10% early withdrawal penalty on an inherited IRA. It's a Benny IRA. You inherited it. And you have to take withdrawals from it because it's inherited. Is this a spousal or non-spousal IRA, Benny?
It's a non-spousal IRA.
You have to take required minimum distributions from it every year, and there is no tax. There's no 10% penalty, but it will be taxed. So give me your question.
All right, so even if I withdraw that money before I'm 59 and a half, I won't incur a penalty?
You will not. In fact, you have to take some out.
Wow.
Every year. Year after death, you have to start taking required minimum distributions based upon your age.
And would that IRA be taxed? That money be taxable?
It is going to be taxed. IRA money is going to be taxed. Taxed as ordinary income, in fact.
There's no penalty. Anything else, Daryl?
No, that's it. I appreciate y'all's time. Thank you so much.
Glad you called. Glad we could help.
Yeah, glad you're out there listening, Daryl. Thank you very much.
Going to have to pay taxes, but no penalty. It's not an option. You have to take distributions.
So what are his options? He can do the required minimum distributions, or he can just start taking it.
He can take as much as he wants to out of it as fast as he can. He can do that. He at least has to take a required minimum distribution. Or you could just take it, spend it in the next 60 months plan. You don't really have to do an RMD. You just have to have it all out in the next 5 years.
All right. Hey, just as a quickie here, I did a financial background research on a real popular story of the day, and I think you'll like this part of it. You know the couple actresses and some other folks got in trouble for the college admission scam?
Heard about that.
Okay, so the tax implications behind that are what's really going to get some of these people in trouble, because it's one thing if you just go bribe the school to let your kid in. But it's quite another thing in the eyes of the IRS. If you go to a fake charity, you take a big tax deduction off of that to get your kid in. The middleman part. Well, if you go back and if you take one example of them, one of them did a $500,000 donation to this fake charity who in turn did the falsifications to get their kid in. They're going to have to owe the $198,000 in taxes that they were able to miss because they wrote that off. The full penalty is another $148,000. And then interest. So they end up having to pay $346,000.
Very expensive mistake for cheating. Hey, if you want to know more about what I do, how I help people, the guided planning system, we have a wine, food, and wisdom event at Keith Young Steakhouse, Madisonville. The phone number to RSVP, it's going to fill up, but try to get in. 504-832-9200, GregoryRicks.com.
I'm James Parker. Your home away from the show is winningatlife.com.
What's that date? April 16th.
April 16th, a week from tomorrow. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks is for educational and entertainment purposes only and does not recommend the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Gregory Ricks is an investment advisor representative with Global Financial Private Capital. Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks is a copyright of Down South Strategies for the private use of our audience. Find podcasts and contact info in the Winning at Life app and winningatlife.com. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.